over his shoulder to her. Stretching out with all his senses, he stepped into the opening. For a long minute he stood there motionlessly, studying the terrain as Mara swept the beams from the glow rod slowly around. The chamber was impressively large and high-ceilinged, with a handful of shallow channels conducting rippling streams of water across the otherwise more or less flat floor. There were none of the stalagmites and stalactites they had to put up with through the rest of the cave system, but the lower wall areas were pockmarked with dozens of half-meter diameter holes that seemed to extend deeply back into the rock. The whole chamber, walls, ceiling, floor, even the creek beds, was covered with what looked to be a thick coating of a white moss-like substance. At the far side, the chamber again shrank down to a tunnel like the one they were standing in.
"There must be openings to the surface," Mara said quietly,
her breath a momentary warmth on the back of his neck.
"No light, but you can feel the air moving. And there's water, too."
"Yes," Luke murmured. Air, water, and a plant base, even a moss one, meant there could be a complete ecology down here. An ecology that might well include predators.
"You want to offer it a ration bar?"
Mara suggested.
"Let's try a rock first," Luke said, stooping down to pick up a fist-sized stone. He threw it out toward the center of the chamber, and as it arced toward the floor, he caught it in a force grip and twisted it sharply to the side. And abruptly, something snapped out from one of the walls and back again.
And in that movement, the stone vanished.
"Whoa,"
Luke said, looking over at that part of the wall as Mara swung the glow rods that direction.
"Did you see where that came from?"
"Somewhere over there, I think,"
Mara said.
"It went by too fast." "There, see it?"
Luke nodded. From one of the deep holes in the wall, a brief cascade of gravel dribbled silently out down the white moss. There was some movement from the moss as the gravel passed, then it settled down again, and the chamber was again silent and still.
"I guess it doesn't like rocks,"
Mara commented.
"We should have gone with the ration bar,"
Luke agreed, reaching out to the force and replaying his short-term memory. It didn't help. The grab had been just too fast.
"Could you see what it was?"
"Some kind of tongue or tentacle, I guess,"
Mara said.
"The main part of the creature is probably inside that hole."
"And he's probably not alone," Luke said, eyeing the other holes around the chamber.
"Any suggestions?"
"Well, for starters, we're going to need a closer look at one of them,"
Mara said.
"You picking up any sentience in there?"
Luke stretched out into the chamber with the force.
"No," he told her.
"Nothing."
"So they're simple predator animals, then,"
she said, squeezing into the opening beside him and handing him the glow rods.
"That helps. Get out of the way, will you?"
"What are you going to do?"
Luke asked, frowning as she pulled out her lightsaber and ignited it.
"Like I said, get a closer look,"
she said. Holding the lightsaber out in front of her, she caught it with a force grip and started spinning slowly. Still spinning, it floated off to their left, keeping close into the wall. It approached one of the holes, and with a flash of light and the multiple crunch of shattered rock, it vanished into the hole.
"Mara Jade!"
Child of Wings gasped.
"Ah! Your weapon claw!"
"It's all right,"
Luke calmed him. He kept his eyes on the hole, not daring to look at Mara.
"If she miscalculated..."
And then, with a second loud crumbling of rock, a long slug-like creature sagged out of the hole, covered with pink blood still oozing from a half-dozen deep cuts across its body. Moving in almost grotesque slow motion, it slid down the mossy wall and came to a stop against a stone on the ground. A coiled tongue rolled loosely out of the slack mouth, followed by Mara's lightsaber. There was a gasp from one of the Kwamja.
"So that is what they are like,"
Keeper of Promises said.
"You hadn't seen one before?"
Luke asked.
No,
the Quapsha replied.
We did not encounter them until 30 seasons ago.
Luke cocked an eyebrow.
Really? Weren't they here before that? Or had you just not run into them?
I cannot properly answer that question.
Keeper of Promises said.
Only rarely have the Quamsha ever come into this part of the cavern.
Trouble?
Mara asked, as she reached out with the Force to retrieve her lightsaber.
There seems to be some question as to whether this room was like this up until 30 years ago,
Luke told her.
Interesting,
Mara said, looking at her now bloodied lightsaber with distaste. Easing it around the corner into the chamber, she wiped it off on an edge of the white moss.
Could be someone moved into the high tower about then and wanted to discourage casual tourism.
That's one possibility, Luke agreed.
Well, I did mine,
Mara said, inspecting her lightsaber again.
You can do the next. What, about 30 of them?
About that, Luke confirmed, doing a quick estimate of the number of holes in the cavern's walls.
You think they might be smart enough to realize we're too big to eat?
I'd hate to count on it,
Mara said.
There's more than enough speed and muscle behind those tongues to break bone.
Agreed, Luke said. I don't suppose there would be any path across that would be out of their range.
Wouldn't want to count on that either,
Mara said.
Anyway, it seems straightforward enough. We hug one wall and slice up each of them from the side as we get to it.
Luke grimaced. Straightforward enough, certainly, but rather bloody. The creatures were non-sentient, of course, and it was vitally important that he and Mara get past them. But he still didn't relish the idea of so much wholesale slaughter. But maybe there was another way.
Keeper of Promises, you've obviously run into these things before,
he said, looking back over his shoulder.
What do they eat?
Keeper of Promises fluttered his wings.
There are migrations of insects at the beginning and closing of each season.
Mara asked.
Migrating insects,
Luke translated.
Ah,
Mara said.
Except when they can get fresh Quamsha, I suppose.
Splitter of Stones ruffled his wings warningly.
Do not be insulting, Jaded of Mara.
Of course, that doesn't explain what they're eating right now,
Mara went on.
Not much in the way of insects down here at the moment.
At least not any visible ones,
Luke said.
Closing down his lightsaber, he eased into the chamber, keeping close to the wall.
Extending his lightsaber handle out as far as he could, he gave the moss a sharp whack. There was a sudden rumbling buzz, and abruptly, a dozen large insects burst from unseen cavities in the moss, flying off madly across the chamber in all directions. They didn't get very far. As suddenly as the insects had appeared, there was a flurry of snapping tongues. And a moment later, the chamber again settled down into silence. Behind Luke, R2 gurgled nervously.
Interesting,
Mara commented.
That moss layer must be thicker than it looks.
She eyed Luke.
I hope you're not going to suggest we beat the walls and try to sneak across while the feeding frenzy is going on.
You're half right,
Luke said, igniting his lightsaber and again stepping into the chamber. Easing the glowing blade tip into the moss, he carefully cut a meter-wide square of the material out of the general expanse. He closed down the weapon and returned it to his belt, got a good grip on the edges, and pulled. With an oddly discomforting tearing sound, a 15-centimeter-thick patch came away. Luke caught it across his forearms, trying to hold it more or less together, wincing at the sight of 100 suddenly disturbed grubs scurrying across the surface or burrowing back into the moss.
Lovely,
Mara said, coming to his side.
And now it's feeding time?
That's the plan, Luke said, easing over toward the next hole in line and lobbing the patch in front of it. The tongue snapped out, and in a flurry of moss dust, the patch vanished.
Let's see if it worked,
Mara said, stepping past Luke and stretching her lightsaber blade in front of the hole.
Nothing happened.
Looks good, she decided. Better get the droid passed while he's still chewing.
Right, Luke said, turning and getting a force grip on R2. Child of Winds, Quamja, let's go. A minute later, they were all on the far side of the lair.
Well, I'm impressed,
Mara declared, easing out of her guard stance to join them.
And it didn't require us to kill,
Luke pointed out, igniting his lightsaber and stepping over toward the next predator lair.
Except a bunch of insects,
Mara said.
You have a problem with insects, by the way?
He thought he'd been hiding it better than that.
They remind me of those Drock things, that's all. No problem.
Ah,
Mara said, closing down her lightsaber and stepping around behind Luke.
Tell you what, you cut and I'll peel, okay?
2 hours later, they finally stopped for the night.
At least I think it's night, Luke said, frowning at his chrono. I just realized I never got around to changing this thing to local time.
It's night,
Mara assured him, leaning thankfully back against her chosen rock and closing her eyes. Later, she knew she would pay for this with numerous aches and pains from the dampness and sharp edges.
But at the moment, it felt immensely good.
Night is defined as time for all good little boys and girls to go to sleep. Therefore, it is definitely night.
I suppose so, Luke said.
Mara opened her eyes and peered across at him. There had been a flicker of something in his emotions just then.
No?
She asked. He shook his head.
No, you're right,
he conceded, a bit reluctantly.
We need to sleep.
Instead of what?
Mara stretched out with a force, trying to read deeper into his mind. But the way was blocked, with nothing she could detect except a barrier of uncertainty tinged with... She frowned. Embarrassment? Was that really what she was getting? It was. And for the great Jedi Master Luke Skywalker to even have such an emotion was definitely evidence of progress. And given that the last thing she wanted to do was make it easy for him, when he was finally willing to crack his shell far enough to ask her about her relationship with Lando, she would tell him. Not before. And maybe by that time he would be able to hear the other more troubling things she had to say to him. Maybe.
Chapter 11.
So, that's it, huh?
Wedge asked, leaning nonchalantly against one of the old-style Bothan lampposts that lined the park and gazing across the open expanse at the gleaming white dome in the center.
That's it, Corin confirmed, frowning at his datapad. At least according to this it is.
Wedge shifted his gaze to the periphery of the park, to the encircling street and the shops with their colorful trade flags that lined it. It was apparently market day, and hundreds of Bothan and alien pedestrians were milling through the area.
They must be nuts, he told Corin. Putting a target like that in...
He broke off as a couple of Duros brushed past him and headed off at an angle across the park.
In a public area?
He continued in a lower tone.
It's just begging for trouble.
On the other hand, having a pole of your planetary shield array inside your capital city pretty much guarantees the safety of that city,
Corin pointed out.
That's going to be comforting to all the off-worlders who do business here.
The Bothans always have been big on image,
Wedge conceded sourly. Even so, he had to admit the place wasn't nearly as vulnerable as it looked. According to the data Bel Iblis had pulled for them, The dome was constructed of a special permasteel alloy, had no windows and only one door, and was filled with armed guards and automated defenses. The shield generator equipment itself was two floors underground, with a self-contained backup power supply, a room full of spare parts, and a cadre of on-duty techs who could allegedly take the entire system apart and put it back together again in 2 hours flat.
True. But image apart, they've also never been slouches at guarding their own rear ends,
Corin pointed out.
They'll have safeguards 7 ways from...
He stopped, as a group of Bothans chattering animatedly to each other pushed their way between the two humans. A pair of stragglers following the main group were even more self-absorbed. One of them ran straight into Wedge, nearly knocking him over.
Oh, my entire clan's apologies, sir, he gasped,
his fur rippling with shame and embarrassment as he backed rapidly away directly toward Corin. Corin tried to sidestep, but the Bothan was already moving too fast and slammed into him, too.
You clumsy fool!
The second Bothan berated him, grabbing Corin's arm to help him regain his balance.
You'll indebt our entire clan to the sun death of Bothawi. Our greatest apologies, kind sirs. Are either of you injured?
No, we're fine,
Wedge assured him. He glanced at Corin for confirmation, caught just the hint of a frown creasing the other's forehead.
On second thought...
Excellent, excellent,
the Bothan continued, clearly not really interested in the answer to his question, as he took his companion's arm and steered them both towards the shops.
A fine and friendsome day to you, then, fine sirs.
Wedge moved close to Corin's side, watching as the two Bothans nearly ran down an old human woman at the edge of the crowd, and then vanished into the general pedestrian flow.
What's the matter? He murmured. Are you hurt?
No,
Corin said slowly, his frown deepening.
There was just something that felt wrong about...
Abruptly, he slapped his tunic, his frown exploding into a look of utter consternation.
Droik! He took my wallet!
What?
Wedge snapped, grabbing for his own pocket and finding it empty.
Oh, shh!
Come on!
Corin bit out, diving into the crowd.
I don't believe this! Wedge snarled, diving in after him. How in space did they pull that off?
I don't know!
Corin called over his shoulder, shoving one pedestrian after another aside.
I would have sworn I knew all the tricks. I don't suppose you happen to notice the clan sigil they were wearing?
I saw it, but I didn't recognize it, Wedge told him, feeling like a complete and blithering fool. Everything they had, money, credit chits, and both their civilian and military IDs were in those wallets. The general's going to kill us if we don't get them back.
Sure, one at a time and very slowly,
Corin agreed darkly. He shouldered his way through one last clump of pedestrians into a temporarily open spot on the walkway and stopped.
Anything?
He asked, craning his neck to look over the crowds.
Nothing,
Wedge said, looking around and wondering what in the name of Akbar's aunt they were going to do now. The Bothan government didn't know they were here, and would probably be furious if they found out. Ditto for any New Republic officials.
I don't suppose you might be able to...
If I couldn't pick up anything when they were right next to me, I'm not likely to be able to do it at this distance,
Corin said, sounding thoroughly disgusted with himself.
I hope you've got a backup plan ready.
I thought you brought it,
Wedge countered glumly. Unfortunately, about all they could do now was get back on their shuttle and rejoin the Peregrine at Ord Trassi. General Bel Iblis, it was rumored, had an awesome repertoire of Corellian invective that only came to the surface when he was absolutely furious. Wedge himself had never personally been able to confirm the rumor. It seemed likely he would soon have the chance to do so.
You're never going to live this one down with Mirax,
he warned with a sigh.
Right. Like you're going to be able to live it down with Aiella?
Corin growled back.
Hey there, my fine young boys. Join me for a drink.
Wedge turned to find an old woman with bright eyes standing beside him.
What?
I asked you to join me for a drink, she repeated. It's such a warm day, and all that bright sunlight is hard on old eyes like mine.
Sorry, but we're a little busy right now, Corin said brusquely, standing on tiptoe to peer again over the crowd.
You young people,
the woman said reproachfully.
Always too busy to sit down and enjoy life. Too busy to listen to the wisdom of the aged.
Wench grimaced, turning his attention back to the crowd and hoping the old fool would take the hint. What she was doing ore digging on the streets of Drevstara in the first place he couldn't imagine.
Look, ma'am, I'm sorry.
But too busy to share a drink with a lonely old lady,
she went on, her voice turning sorrowful.
That's just plain scandalous, especially when the lonely old lady is buying.
Wedge looked back, searching for a firm yet polite way to get her off his back.
Look, ma'am,
and paused. Her hand had come up now and was holding two items up for his inspection. Two small black folders. They're wallets. Wedge felt his mouth drop open a few millimeters, focusing for the first time on her face. It was the same woman the two pickpockets had bumped into during their hasty getaway.
Corin,
he said, reaching out and taking the wallets from the woman's hand.
Never mind.
What? Corin demanded, the words strangling off midway as Wedge held out his wallet to him. Warily he took it, his eyes leaving the woman just long enough to confirm that everything was still there.
May I ask how you came into possession of these?
The woman chuckled, shaking her head.
You Corsic people are a stitch. Do they program you for sound or just feed you the manuals?
Corin glanced at Wedge.
We like to be precise, he said, his voice cautiously offended. And it's former Corsic.
Whatever, she said with a shrug. Either way, you boys ought to be more careful. Those are nice family hollows you've got in there, and I'd hate to see you lose them. Now, Wedge, how about that drink? We really do have a lot to talk about.
Yes, why not?
Wedge agreed cautiously, a whole list of unpleasant possibilities running through his mind. If she fingered them to the local criminal groups, or worse, to the Vengeance Organization, or even if she merely demanded a hefty reward.
You obviously already know our names, and you are...
Miranda Savage,
she said.
Sort of a second-string employee of your old friend Talon Card. And on second thought, you two are buying.
The waiter droid delivered their drinks, spilling the obligatory few drops onto the carved stone table, accepted Wedge's coin, and departed.
Chakta Sekai,
Miranda said, lifting her glass.
Did I get that right, Corin? I've never been sure of the proper Corellian pronunciation for that toast.
Close enough,
Corin growled, lifting his gaze with obvious reluctance from the datapad and looking at Wedge.
Well?
Wedge shrugged.
It looked okay to me.
Okay isn't good enough, Corin said darkly. I also noticed the only way to confirm that this letter of introduction is really from Card would be to run the ID codes through Coruscant.
So get your tails over to the New Republic liaison office and have them do that,
Miranda said, taking a long drink of the pale blue-green liquor she'd ordered.
We aren't exactly fat on time here, you know.
Yes,
Wedge murmured, trying to read that so totally unconcerned face.
Unfortunately...
Unfortunately, you can't do that,
she suggested, peering at Wedge over her glass.
Yes, I thought so. Awkward.
Why do you say that? Corin demanded.
Why do I say what?
Miranda countered.
That you're on your own, or that that's awkward?
The first, Corin said. You sound like you almost expected that.
Oh, come on,
she said scornfully.
I did get a long look into your wallets, remember? What other conclusion is there when you've got your military IDs buried back behind the civilian ones?
Exactly, Corin said,
fixing her with the kind of glare that Wedge decided was probably standard Corellian security issue.
Which means you already knew we couldn't check up on this story before you spun it for us.
And what? Created that on the fly?
She asked, pointing toward the data card still in his data pad.
Or had it sitting in with your collection of a dozen other forgeries?
Corin shot back.
How are we supposed to know?
Lifting her glass, Miranda drained it.
Never mind,
she said, getting to her feet.
I assumed we were on the same side here, and thought we might be able to help each other. Apparently we can't. Try to hold on to your wallets a little better next time.
Wedge looked at Corin, caught the other's fractional nod. Please, sit down, Miranda, he said, half rising from his own chair and catching her arm. It felt painfully thin beneath her sleeve. Please. She paused, throwing a speculative look at each of them. Then, smiling tightly at Wedge, she resumed her seat.
A test, I presume? Did I pass?
Well enough for us to at least listen some more, Wedge told her. Let's start with exactly why you're here.
Presumably the same reason you are,
she said.
Card sees an explosion coming, with the Bothans in the middle of it, and wants to see if there are outside forces planning to squeeze the detonators.
And you're all he could spare, Corin suggested.
Hardly, Miranda said. He's got people all over the New Republic tracking personnel and equipment movements. Other people are sifting through every report and hint and speculation that crops up. I just happen to be the one on the ground here.
With what instructions? Wedge asked.
Miranda nodded in the direction of the tap-calf door.
There's a lot of firepower in orbit up there, she said. They could start shooting at each other any time. But if anyone wants to take a poke at Bothawi itself, they'll have to get rid of the planetary shields first. Card asked me to keep an eye on them.
Is that why you were hanging around the Drevstarn generator? Wedge asked. Trying to see how someone might get inside?
I'd already done that,
she said.
Actually, I was out there today seeing if I could spot anyone else casing the place.
She smiled maliciously.
Which is why I latched on to you two. No offense, but you stand out in a crowd like a Wookiee at an Ogre family reunion.
Wedge nodded as understanding struck.
Is that why you had our pockets picked? So you could find out who we were?
Miranda's thin lips twitched.
As a matter of fact, no, I didn't. I just happened to be watching when those Bothans lifted your stuff and made sure I'd be in position to lift it back from them.
Wedge looked at Corin.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
That someone may have noticed us, Corin said, running a careful glance around the tap calf. Could be. I don't suppose you might have any idea where those two pickpockets might have gone to ground, do you?
Sorry,
Miranda said, shaking her head.
I only got here a couple of days ago and haven't had a chance to link up with the local fringe.
But you could link up with them if you wanted to?
Wedge asked, still trying to get a feel for this woman. Card he more or less trusted, but Card had a huge organization, and he couldn't possibly know everyone in it personally. Miranda Savage could easily be playing both ends against the middle. or bleeding Card's organization for her own purposes, or even just using him for free room and board whenever she was between more unsavory jobs. If someone from Vengeance, say, were to offer her a big enough pot of money to betray him and Corrin, would she do it? Miranda sighed.
Look, Wedge,
she said quietly.
I used to do a fair amount of con work, and in con work you learn how to read people's faces. I can tell you don't trust me, and I really don't blame you. We have just met, after all. But I've got that letter from Card, and I did get your wallets back. Offhand, I don't know what else I can do to persuade you.
But you do want to persuade us, Corrin said. She smiled, a tight, brittle thing.
I was given an assignment,
she said simply. Wedge suppressed a grimace. He still felt odd about this, but her arguments did seem to make sense. If anything turned up later, Corrin's Jedi senses would hopefully pick it up.
All right, he said. For the moment, at least, let's pool resources. Any suggestions?
Well, obviously, the first thing we need to do is find out if anyone suspicious has arrived since that orbiting research station was destroyed a week ago,
Miranda said, her tone all business now.
That's what started this whole military build-up, after all. If Vengeance decided to take advantage of that, they may have needed to move more of their people here.
Vengeance or anyone else, Corrin murmured. The Empire, for example.
Seems reasonable, Wedge agreed. There's only one problem. That information is locked up over in the Bothawi customs computers, and we haven't got access to it.
Oh, that's not a problem,
Miranda assured him with an airy wave of her hand.
Come on, finish up, and we'll go to your place and talk about it.
Sure,
Wedge said, taking a long sip from his as-yet-untouched drink and getting to his feet. Whatever happened here, he decided, this was going to be most interesting. Not that that was necessarily a good thing.
Really?
Nabbit said into his calmly, looking up as Cliff came into the Exoticalia Pet Emporium and closed the door behind him.
Hey, that's great! When can I come by and pick them up?
Anytime you wish,
the Bothan customs official's voice came from the comlink. From the background came the faint sound of a sneeze.
Preferably soon.
You bet we will, Nabbit said cheerfully. Got customers coming in already wanting to see what we got, and we have to tell them we haven't got anything yet. We could come over now, right?
I believe I've already answered that question,
the Bothan replied, as another sneeze sounded in the background.
Oh, right, Nabbit said as Cliff came over. Great, thanks a lot.
A day of peace and profit to you.
Yeah, same to you.
He shut the comlink off.
We're in, he told Cliff, putting the instrument away. And from the sneezing, I'd say at least some of the Bothans are allergic to our little Palpians.
Should make them eager to get rid of them, Cliff said.
I think it already did, Nabbit agreed. You'll see Horvick.
Cliff nodded.
He and Penson are in his maintenance staff for that Hodin dive 2 blocks back from the shield generator. Post-closing shift.
Perfect,
Nabbit said. If their schematics were right, that tapcalf was directly over one of the underground conduits carrying power cables into the place.
Yeah, Cliff's face soured. Now for the bad news. The 2 Bothan lifters we hired muffed the job.
Nabbit swore. He should have known better than to trust local talent.
They got caught.
According to them, the actual lift went smooth as lake ice.
Cliff grimaced.
It's just that when they got back to me, they didn't have the wallets anymore.
Nabbit felt his eyes narrow.
What do you mean, they didn't have them?
Just what I said. They lost them.
Best guess is that someone in the crowd saw them lift the wallets and return the favor.
You're sure they didn't just pocket the cash themselves?
Cliff shrugged. Not absolutely sure, no. But it's hard to believe a pair of new rep agents would be carrying more cash than I was offering.
He pursed his lips.
Unless, of course, they aren't new rep agents.
Navid pulled over a chair and settled thoughtfully into it. Could he have been mistaken about them?
No, he answered his own question. No, they're new rep, all right. Probably military, too, from the look of them. The question is, who is this new skifter who's joined the party?
You don't think it was just another lifter taking advantage of the situation? Cliff asked.
Navid cocked an eyebrow.
Do you?
No, not really, Cliff said heavily. Too much danger of getting caught with the goods when the marks woke up.
My point's exactly, Navid said. No, they've picked up a fringe ally. A very good fringe ally, from the sound of it.
Cliff hissed softly between his teeth.
We don't have anyone to spare for proper surveillance, he reminded Navid. Maybe we ought to get rid of him.
Navid scratched his cheek. It was a tempting suggestion. A tricky job on tight timetable was bad enough without new rep military agents snooping around. If they could be quietly eliminated...
No, he said. Not yet. They can't possibly be on to us. We'll keep an eye out, and if they seem to be taking too much interest in us, we may have to do something about it. But for right now, we'll let them be.
Cliff's lip twitched.
You're the boss, he said. I hope you're not making a mistake.
If I am, it's a mistake that's easily corrected, Navid said, standing up. Come on. Let's put on our earnest but stupid faces and go get our animals.
Chapter 12. From somewhere in the far distance came the warbling call of Nogri combat code.
The ship is approaching,
Bark Kemp translated.
Shakasak can see it.
I'll take his word for it,
Leia said, hemmed in by the closely spaced trees that clustered on this small hill overlooking Pakrik Minor's North Barris spaceport. She could see precious little but greenery around her, a minuscule patch of blue sky directly above her, and the landspeeder they'd borrowed from Sabmin beneath her. A slightly awkward situation, in her opinion, and probably unnecessary besides. Given that that transmission had carried Bell Iblis's personal signature code and bridge break confirmation, it could be no one but the general on that incoming ship. But her Nogri guards hadn't wanted her to show herself until the ship's occupant was positively identified. And for the sake of their concerns, she had agreed to do this their way. She could hear the approaching ship now.
Sounds pretty small, she said,
running through her Jedi sensory enhancement exercises to boost the distant whine into something clearer.
It does indeed.
Bar Kimp's quiet agreement boomed uncomfortably loud in her sensitized hearing.
I will observe.
There was a crash of a body moving through foliage, and thunderous noise fading to whispers as Leia reduced her hearing back to its normal level. In the distance, she heard the whine blip up, then drop off sharply as the ship settled onto its pad and powered down. The sound faded away completely, and for a long minute there was nothing but the rustling of leaves around her. Leia waited, wondering what was going on out there. The grandly named spaceport was actually little more than a large open field with a handful of permacrete landing pads scattered around. It shouldn't take this long for Sakasak to get over to the ship and check it out. Unless there was some kind of trouble. She stretched out to the Force, seeking guidance. And then, drifting in on the breeze, came a second Nogri battle call.
There is no danger, and we may come,
Barkimk said from her side, his voice slightly puzzled.
But he warns that all is not as expected.
Leia frowned. Not as expected? What does that mean? Isn't Garm there?
I do not know,
Barkimk said, climbing into the land speeder and keying its repulsor lifts.
I could see only that the ship was indeed small, as you had already ascertained, and that it bore no markings.
No markings? Leia asked carefully. None?
None that I could see,
Barkimk said again, easing the land speeder through the trees.
Perhaps at a closer distance they will be visible.
Aside from a dilapidated grain freighter at the far end of the field, the newcomer was the only ship in sight. It was indeed a small vessel, probably a two-person craft, with the lines of a diplomatic shuttle, but of a design Leia couldn't remember ever having seen before. At the bow, where a diplomatic ship would have carried governmental markings, there was nothing. Midway along the side, the hatchway stood open, with a short ramp leading down from it to the permacrete.
Has Sakasak gone inside?
She asked.
Yes,
Barkimk answered.
He is waiting with the pilot and passenger.
Pilot and passenger? Leia nodded mechanically, her eyes on the ship's bow. Now, as they neared the craft, she could see for the first time that there were indeed faint markings on the hull where some sort of insignia had once been. And even with just the outlines visible, there was something vaguely familiar about the design. Something that was triggering an equally vague but nevertheless disturbing memory. The land speeder came to a stop at the ramp.
Counselor Organa Solo,
Sakasak called down gravely from the open hatchway.
Your visitor humbly requests the honor of your presence.
Of course, Leia said, matching the Nogri's formal tone. Sakasak knew Bel Iblis quite well. Who could be in there that would make him go all formal this way?
Would my visitor like to present his request in person?
He would,
Sakasak said, bowing slightly and stepping back out of the hatchway. And as he did so, a new figure stepped into view. A tall humanoid covered with soft golden down, with subtle purple markings around his eyes and shoulders.
Peace to you, High Counselor Leia Organa Solo,
he said, his voice smooth and rich, yet with an undertone of deep and ancient sadness to it.
I am Elogos Akla, Trustent of the Ka'amasi Remnant. Will you join me aboard my ship?
Leia swallowed hard as the memories came flooding back. Her visit as a child to the secret Ka'amasi refugee camps on Alderaan, and the hundreds of colorful flags flying Ka'amasi family crests that she'd seen there. Crests like the one that had been removed from the bow of Elagos's ship.
Yes, Trustent Akla, she said. I would be honored.
Please forgive my intrusion upon your privacy,
the Ka'amasi said, backing away as she started up the ramp.
I am told you and your bondmate came here for rest, and I would not normally have violated your aloneness. But I greatly wish to speak with you, and the one whom I brought with me said this errand was important to the point of terrible urgency.
And that person is?
Leia asked as she stepped into the ship, stretching out with the force. There was definitely someone else here. Someone familiar.
I believe you are acquainted with him,
Elagos said, stepping out of the way to the side. And there, in a chair in the back of the room, squirming nervously under Sakasak's watchful eye.
Gent!
Leia exclaimed.
What in the name of the Force are you doing here?
I needed to talk to you right away,
Gent said, his voice sounding even more nervous than he looked as he bounded out of the chair.
I wanted General Belyablis, but he's missing and I can't get a hold of him. And you're president of the New Republic and all, so...
I'm not actually president at the moment, Gint. Leia interrupted him gently. I'm on a leave of absence. Ponk Gavrasim is in charge of the government.
Gint blinked in surprise, and in spite of the seriousness in his manner, Leia had to fight to keep from smiling. Gint had once been Talon Card's top slicer, with such an awesome talent for breaking into and otherwise manipulating computer systems that Belyablis had made it his personal goal to lure the kid away from Card's organization. In the years since, the general had succeeded in doing so. Gint had proved himself over and over, rising steadily through the ranks until he now held the post of Crypt Chief. But away from his beloved computers, the young man was about as naive and innocent and lost as it was humanly possible to be. The fact that, living in the heart of Coruscant, he'd still managed to miss Leia's leave of absence entirely was just about normal for him.
"Perhaps she can still be of assistance," Elagos suggested, stepping into Gent's embarrassed consternation with typical Ka-Masi aplomb. "Why don't you tell her why you're here?"
Yeah, sure,
Gint said, recovering his voice and digging a data pad out of an old and worn holder on his belt.
"You see, General Belyablis gave me a data card."
"One moment,"
Sakasak's harsh voice cut him off.
"Was it you who sent Counselor Organa Solo a message over Belyablis's name?"
"Well, yeah,"
Gint admitted, eyeing the Nogri warily.
"I wanted the general, you see, but I couldn't get to him, and I found out Leia was here."
"What do you mean you couldn't get to him?" Leia interrupted. "Where is he? Has something happened?"
No, he's off in the Kothlis system,"
Gint assured her quickly, his eyes reluctantly shifting away from the Nogri to her.
"Some kind of ship build-up, I don't know what for, but I couldn't get a message through to him, not even with top clearance codes, so when I found out you were here..."
"How did you find out she was here?"
Sakasak demanded. Gint squirmed again.
"Well, it was in Gavrasim's files. I mean, I wouldn't usually slice into High Council stuff, but it was really important. And then I met him."
He waved helplessly at Elagos.
"I was waiting at your office for you,"
the Ka-Masi spoke up, his voice sending a wave of welcome calmness through the room.
"As my two colleagues made clear when you spoke with them, we are deeply concerned about the direction this matter has taken. Now, with overt threats toward the Bothan people, that concern has been greatly magnified."
He shrugged, the gesture rippling through his entire back up to his shoulders.
"I had, of course, planned to wait until you returned to speak further with you, but Crypt Chief Gint was so insistent that he see you immediately that I offered him transport, provided he was able to locate you."
"And provided he could use Garm's private signature code to make sure I'd come to the spaceport?"
Leia asked, lifting her eyebrows at Gint. The young slicer winced.
"I didn't think you'd come if it was just me," he muttered.
Leia suppressed a sigh. Yes, that was indeed classic Gint. In actual fact, his name and expertise carried enormous weight among the upper levels of the New Republic government. Another fact he'd undoubtedly missed completely. And as for bringing Elagos along, Gint probably didn't have the faintest idea of how to fly a starship himself. Frustrating and annoying, but it all fit.
"All right, relax," she said. "The interrogation is over, and all is at least temporarily forgiven. Now, what is this errand that was worth breaking half a dozen laws for?"
Wincing again, Gint handed her the datapad in his hand.
"It's really a message for Belyablis," he said. "But look, just read it, okay?"
Leia took the datapad and keyed it on. On the other hand, she couldn't help wondering if she'd known that it was only Gint and not Belyablis who wanted to see her, would she have pushed harder for Han to take her along on his trip into the heart of the Empire?
even without Ghent's message, the reasons had seemed right and proper at the time. But still... And then the words popped onto the datapad display, and an icy chill ran through her.
"Where did you get this?"
she asked, her voice sounding unreal through the sudden pounding in her ears.
"General Bel Iblis brought it back from Morisham,"
Ghent said, his voice trembling now, too.
"There was a Corellian corvette that came into the system. Only a Star Destroyer caught up with it and took it away."
"I remember reading Garm's private report on that,"
Leia said.
"He wanted the incident kept quiet while he tried to find out what it was all about."
"Well,
this was a transmission from the corvette," Ghent said. "It was all mangled up, but I was able to sort through the jamming and untangle it."
He took a noisy breath.
"You see why I had to get it to someone right away?"
Leia nodded silently, staring down at the message. "Is Colonel Mej Vermel, special envoy from Admiral Pellion, sent here to contact General Bel Iblis concerning the negotiation of a peace treaty between the Empire and New Republic? My ship is under attack by traitorous elements of the Empire, and I do not expect to survive. If the New Republic agrees to hold such discussions, Admiral Pellion will be at the abandoned gas mining center on Pesatine in 1 month to meet with you. Repeating, this is Colonel Mej Vermel."
"Counselor,"
Sakasak murmured quietly from across the room.
"Is there trouble?"
Leia looked up at the Nogri, almost startled to find him there as thoughts swirled through her mind.
A peace treaty? Not a temporary truce, but an actual, genuine peace? Something she'd been looking for and longing for since the days of Emperor Palpatine and her own youthful decision to oppose him and all he stood for. And here it was, being offered to them by the supreme commander of the entire Imperial fleet. Or was it? Pellion was only offering to negotiate, after all.
Were there preconditions that would be brought up at such a meeting? Conditions that would turn the whole exercise into little more than a waste of time? Or worse, a propaganda coup for the Empire? Or was it worse even than that? Was it some sort of trap?
"Counselor,"
Sakasak repeated, stepping to her side, his large black eyes gazing with concern up at her.
"What disturbs you?"
Wordlessly, she handed the datapad to him. Because Pellion probably wasn't in charge of the Empire anymore. If Lando was to be believed, and if that wasn't some sort of trick itself, Grand Admiral Thrawn had returned. And with Thrawn, nothing was ever what it seemed. Ever. Sakasak spat something vicious-sounding in the Nogri language.
"You cannot believe this,"
he growled, thrusting the datapad back at Ghent, as if it were something unclean he was disgusted to even touch.
"The Empire is the embodiment of lies and treachery. It will never be otherwise."
"It's often been that way, yes,"
Leia agreed soberly.
"On the other hand..."
"There is no other hand,"
Sakasak snarled.
"They betrayed and murdered my people. They betrayed and murdered your people."
"I know,"
Leia murmured, the old ache rising again like acid in her throat.
"And if Thrawn has indeed cheated death,"
the Nogri went on, his voice turning to something deadly,
"then there is even more reason to reject anything the Empire might say."
"Probably," Leia said. "And yet..."
"May I see it?"
Elagos asked. Leia hesitated. Technically, this was highly confidential New Republic business.
"Yes, of course,"
she said, handing the datapad to him, her force-sensitized instincts overruling the strict legalities of the situation. Before the destruction of their world, the Ka'amasi had been among the greatest mediators and negotiators the Old Republic had ever known.
their skills in such matters rivaling even those of the Jedi. Elagos might well have some insight that would help her sort it all out. For a long minute, the Ka'amasi studied the datapad in silence. Then, his blue-on-green eyes glittering with emotion, he lifted his gaze to her again.
"I see no alternative," he said. "Yes, it may be a trap, but that is not certain. And if there is even a small chance that Admiral Pelion is sincere, that chance must be explored."
Sakasak regarded the other suspiciously.
"I have long admired the Ka'amasi, Trust and Akla," he said,
his voice on the edge of challenging.
"But in this, you speak the words of an unweaned child. Do you truly suggest Bel Iblis walk openly into the Empire's hands?"
"You misunderstand, my friend," Elagos said calmly. "I offer no such course for General Bel Iblis. Indeed, as you have already pointed out, it would be impossible even to suggest it to him."
"Why?" Leia asked.
"Because as Ghent has discovered, we have no means of communicating quickly with him," Elagos said. "And speed is vital, because this opportunity may even now be closing."
He touched the datapad.
"I do not know when the Morishim incident took place, but it is clear that forces opposing Admiral Pelion have already begun to gather against him. Even if all overt attacks have failed, he cannot wait forever for Coruscant's response."
Sakasak threw a wary glance at Leia.
"Who, then, do you suggest be asked to walk into the Empire's hands?"
Elagos shook his head.
"There is no need to ask anyone," he told the Nogri. "The choice is apparent and obvious. I will go."
Sakasak seemed taken aback.
"You?"
"Of course," Elagos said. "Counselor Organa Solo, I have an obligation to return Ghent to Coruscant. If you will accept that obligation upon yourself, I can leave for Pesatine immediately."
Leia sighed. Now at last she understood why it had seemed right for her to let Han go to Bastion alone while she waited here.
"There's no need, Elagos," she said. "You can take him back yourself. I'll be the one going to Pesatine."
Sakasak made a noise in his throat.
"I cannot allow you to do that, Counselor Organa Solo," he rumbled. "To step into such danger..."
"I'm sorry, Sakasak,"
Leia said gently.
"But as Elagos said, there's only one choice possible. I'm the only one here who has the authority to negotiate on behalf of the New Republic."
"Then bring someone else in from Coruscant,"
the Nogri demanded.
"As Elagos has also said, we don't have time,"
Leia said.
"If Pelion is on schedule, he's been at Pesatine for 11 days already. I have to go, and I have to go now."
She took a deep breath.
"If you can't handle dealing with Imperials, I'll certainly understand. I can take the Falcon and go alone."
"Please do not insult me,"
Sakasak said darkly.
"Buck Kimp and I will of course accompany you, even to death, if that is what awaits us."
"Thank you,"
Leia said.
"Thank you too, Ghent, for bringing this to me. You did the right thing, flagrant illegalities and all. Trust and Akla, I thank you too for your assistance here."
"Wait a minute,"
Ghent said, his eyes looking confused again.
"You're going out there? Alone?"
"Not alone,"
Sakasak growled.
"We will be with her."
"Yeah, sure,"
Ghent said, looking back and forth between Leia and Elagos.
I meant, Elagos, can't you, you know...
"Travel alongside her,"
the Ka'amasi said.
Certainly, I would be more than willing to do so. Though I have no official standing with the New Republic, my people have some small skills at negotiation.
He regarded Ghent thoughtfully.
But as I have already explained, I have the prior obligation of returning you to Coruscant.
Unless you're willing to take a shuttle over to Pakrik Major and find a liner to take you back, Leia suggested.
But I didn't mean for you to...
Ghent's face twisted into something almost painful-looking.
I mean, I only brought you the message because...
He sighed, a great exhaling of air that seemed to shrink him down like a collapsing balloon.
Okay, he said in resignation.
Yeah, okay, sure. I'll go with you too. Why not?
Leia blinked. It was not the decision she'd been expecting from him.
I appreciate the offer, Ghent, she said. But it's really not necessary.
No, no, don't try to talk me out of it, Ghent said. I got you into this. Might as well stick through to the end. Everybody says I need to get out more anyway.
Leia glanced at Elagos, caught the other's microscopic nod. Apparently 3 days alone in a two-man ship with a Ka Masi had done Ghent a world of good. Or else the young slicer was finally beginning to grow up.
All right, she said. Thank you. Thank you all.
She glanced around the room.
We'll have to take the Falcon, I'm afraid. This ship is too small for all of us. It's about a 20-minute land speeder ride away.
Then let us go, Elagos said, gently prodding. There is little time to spare.
5 minutes later, they were racing across the Pakrik Minor landscape, the whistling of the wind the only sound as the five occupants sat wrapped in the silence of their own thoughts. What the others were thinking during that trip, Leia never learned. But for herself, a new and disturbing thought had suddenly occurred to her. A Jedi, she knew, could often see or sense into the future, and as she herself had often done, could similarly gain a sense of the rightness of the path being taken, or the Jedi's own position along that path. She was seeing that rightness for herself now. But could any Jedi, she wondered, see ahead to his or her own death? Or would the path leading to that moment always remain in darkness? Feeling right and proper, perhaps, all the way up to the point of passage? She didn't know. Perhaps this would be the path where she would find out.
Chapter 13. From the far aft cabin, the warbling of the Wild Card's bridge battle alert was a quiet, almost subtle thing. But Shaeda had been trained to notice subtle things, and she was awake and out of bed before the distant trilling had finished its downscale and shut off. Throwing on her robe, stuffing her blaster into a side pocket, she headed for the bridge. The corridors were deserted. Shaeda picked up her pace, ears cocked for the noise of battle or straining engines that would indicate escape or evasion. But the ship was eerily quiet, with the steady drone of the drive and her own softly slapping footsteps the only sounds she could hear. Ahead, the bridge door slid open at her approach. Slipping her hand into her robe pocket and getting a grip on her blaster, she charged through the doorway and skidded to a slightly confused halt. The bridge crew were seated in their normal positions, some of them looking questioningly back at her abrupt entrance. Ahead, out the viewport, the mottled sky of hyperspace was rolling past.
Hello, Shaeda,
Card said, looking up from the engineering monitor where he and Pornfil had apparently been consulting on something.
I thought you were still sleeping. What brings you here at this hour?
Your battle alert. What did you think?
Shaeda countered, looking around again.
What's going on? A drill?
Not quite, Card said, stepping over to her. My apologies. I didn't think you'd be able to hear the alert where you were.
Listening for trouble is part of my job, she said tartly. What is this not quite drill of yours?
We're coming up on Epsol system and the World Day Arc, Card explained. There's a fair chance we'll run into some trouble when we come out of hyperspace. Shada looked out the viewport.
That rogue pirate gang Mombasa told us about?
Possibly, Card said. Word of our voyage has undoubtedly preceded us.
Not to mention word of your identity,
Shada said. Card's lip twitched. Regardless, after that ship we spotted hanging around our Jangal course change point, I thought it best we hit the Epsol system prepared.
Sounds reasonable,
Shada said.
Except for the part about you not thinking I needed to be informed.
I didn't think there would be anything you could do, Card said mildly. Unless they board us, which I guarantee they will not do, there won't be any hand-to-hand combat.
Hand-to-hand is hardly my sole area of expertise,
Shada said stiffly.
Or didn't I mention I'm fully qualified to handle those turbolasers of yours?
The whole bridge had taken on an air of watchful silence. You hadn't mentioned that, no, Card said. But at this point, it's largely irrelevant. The turbolaser bays are by necessity somewhat exposed. And if there's trouble, I'd rather have you here, where it's... well...
where it's safe?
Shada finished for him.
Why? Because it might not be pirates waiting for us out there?
Duncan turned half around from the helm to look at Card. He opened his mouth as if to speak, thought better of it, and turned back around again.
It's not Cardass,
Card said, his voice carefully controlled.
Not here. If he was going to hit us at a distance, he'd have done so already. That means he's decided to wait until we reach Exocron.
It's always nice to have something to look forward to,
Shada growled.
In that case, let me take one of the turbo lasers. I'm at least as good as Balig, probably better than Chal.
We could put Joel at the spotting station,
Duncan murmured. Card's lip twitched, but he nodded.
All right, we'll see what you can do.
Duncan, tell Chal to come back and take over spotting. Isishi, how are we for timing?
We are 4 minutes, one half from arrival,
the Tagorian at the sensor station said, her yellow eyes studying Shada with unblinking intensity.
You'd best get up there,
Card said to Shada, nodding toward the bridge door. It's turbo laser too.
I know,
Shada said.
I'll check in when I'm ready.
3 minutes later, she was strapped into the control console, facing the big transparisteel bubble, running a pre-fire checklist and fighting back 20 years' worth of ghosts of other such battles, first with the Mistral and then with Mazik's smugglers. With most of those battles, she'd been lucky enough to be on the winning side. With the others...
Shada, this is Chal,
the young man's voice came through her comm headset.
You ready?
Almost,
Shada said, watching as the last of the self-check lights went green.
Yes, ready.
Okay.
If Chal was annoyed at having been summarily kicked out of his post, it didn't show in his voice.
Stay sharp. We're counting down now. Starting at 10. Mark?
She listened with half an ear to the countdown, her hands resting on the controls, her eyes already starting the combat scan pattern her Mistral instructors had taught her so long ago. The count reached 0. The mottled sky flared to star lines and shrank to stars. And with a terrific jolt, a laser bolt slammed hard into the wild card's side.
Stop! Shh! 7 targets waiting!
Hasishi snarled, the tone of her voice giving Shada the mental picture of all that gray-white fur standing on end.
Stop! Small attack vessels! Corsair class!
Confirmed on number and class,
Chal added.
Bearings.
The targeting recitation was drowned out in the hissing roar of her turbo laser as Shada swung the weapon around and fired. One of the Corsairs, trying to sneak in under the freighter's docking bay, caught the burst squarely on its left flank and flashed into dust. His wingman, dodging most of the debris, scrambled wildly for distance,
but succeeded only in flying straight into a burst from Griv's turbolaser. What remained of the craft continued outward on an inertial trajectory, blazing like a flying funeral pyre.
Two down,
Chaw crowed.
Make that three. Everyone stay sharp,
Card's calmer voice said.
We caught them by surprise this time. They know what to expect now.
Shada nodded silent agreement, taking a quick look at her tactical display. The four remaining Corsairs had pulled back, pacing the wild card, but clearly not overly anxious to engage it again. Card, meanwhile, had the freighter burning hard through space toward the distant gas giant around which the Cathal Republic's capital world of Dayar.